joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The 21st Winter Olympics open in Vancouver tomorrow. But as we here in the nation's capital dig out after a couple of winter storms in the mid-Atlantic, Vancouver is trucking and flying the snow in for the games. Joining me here in the studio to talk about what's happening in the games, who to watch, when, is Matt Rennie of the Washington Post. Good morning to you, Matt. Thanks for getting here.
Thank you, Diane. Happy to be here.
From the CBC in Vancouver is Ian Hanna-Mansing of CBC News Vancouver. Good morning to you, Ian.
Good morning.
And Christine Brennan, sports columnist for USA Today. Christine, it's good to hear your voice again.
Diane, it's great to be with you. Thanks
Thank
for having
you.
Me.
Christine, do tell us about the latest on the snow in Vancouver.
Well, it's funny, you and I are here. We were just talking as we both came over to the studio in Vancouver. And Diane, it's springtime. It's about 45 degrees, rainy. Reminds me of a kind of a gray, rainy day in the east.
Oh, dear.
But spring-like. And I flew out of D.C., of course, as everyone's got a horror story, I flew out of Dulles on Sunday night, made it west to L.A., and then up to Vancouver Monday. And it was so stark and revealing to me that here I was escaping the snow in my hometown of Washington, and I felt like I should have put some in my carry-on bag and brought it up here. And I come here, and it's green grass and beautiful. So it's wonderful in the sense of escaping the weather back east. It's very, I think, embarrassing for a Winter Olympic city to have to be trucking in snow to the venue, the Cypress Mountain venue, I'm sure we'll talk more about. It's not Vancouver's fault. The IOC picked a moderate climate. Here we are. It's a beautiful city, but it sure doesn't feel like the Winter Olympics.
It is indeed a beautiful city, but Ian, there's been some talk. I don't know whether it's just rumor or not, but hasn't there been some talk of actually moving the Olympics?
Well, definitely that would be sort of wild speculation. The people from VanOck, the organizing committee for the Vancouver Olympics, have said all along that nothing has to be moved. They have contingency plans. And you have to keep in mind, there are kind of three Olympic host areas here. There's the mountain resort of Whistler, about a 2.5-hour drive away. It's deep in the midst of winter, in the grip of winter. I was up there last Friday. They had some issues with fog yesterday and snowfall, but definitely if you go up there and the alpine ski events are up there, you'd have no question that you're in a Winter Olympic host area. There's the city of Vancouver, which, as Christine said, feels like spring. You know, this is it's a little warmer than usual, but not startlingly different than what we might expect here in February. Definitely doesn't feel like winter. And then Cypress Mountain, what we call the North Shore Mountains, within a maybe half-hour drive from downtown, that's the trouble spot. That's where they're being forced to truck in snow. But they won't be moving anything.
How long is that snow that's being trucked in going to last?
Well, I mean, today's forecast, and it's typical of the kind of forecast we've seen now for about 3 or 4 weeks, is occasionally the temperature flirts with freezing, which here we describe in Celsius, around 0 degrees Celsius. That is obviously weather where snow is protected and snowmaking is possible. But then it creeps up every single day for the last, 3, 4 weeks to +3, +4. So you don't have to remember too much of your high school science to know that snow is not going to survive very long in those conditions. But, you know, we've talked to lots of athletes, and I'm sure Christine has a better sense of the sports side of this than I do, but the athletes that I've heard from have all kinds of stories about being on, say, the snowboard circuit in Europe and competing with grass and even cows grazing on either side of them while there's a little narrow patch of snow that's been carefully constructed for both their competition and the cameras. So they tell us the same thing can happen in Cyprus.
Well, and the reality is, Diane, that as Ian said, these athletes are here. This is the Olympic Games. They will make do, and they'll all be in the same conditions. But it's even on Whistler, as you mentioned, Ian, the reality is right now they're dealing with fog and they're dealing with warm temperatures, and there's some snow that's coming to Cyprus. That's where the freestyle skiing and the snowboarding will be. That's the trouble spot. That's where it's kind of brown and green right now. But then there's going to be 2 inches of rain over the next couple of days. So, yeah, all of a sudden that snow will melt, and wouldn't D.C. love to have this problem right now?
Well, and I'll tell you what, we've just heard we're expecting more snow next Monday, if you can believe it. Christine Brennan is sports columnist for USA Today. This is the 7th consecutive Winter Olympic Games she's covered. Ian Hanna-Mansing is co-anchor of CBC News Vancouver. He's covered the past 3 Winter Olympics for CBC Television. And we are going to take your calls, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And you can join us through Facebook and Twitter. Matthew Rennie of the Washington Post, the other big story besides the snow, came out yesterday when Lindsey Vonn said she might not be able to compete in these games.
Yeah, it's a huge story because she was really expected to be sort of what people were billing as the Michael Phelps of these games, as somebody, a premier U.S. athlete, somebody who has really been part of the promotion going leading into the games, as somebody that could win more medals in one game than any American skier ever has. And she revealed yesterday on the Today Show that she has a severely bruised shin that she from a crash she suffered in training, and that it's very painful for her to even put on her boot right now. So it definitely will. She's expected to make training runs in the next couple of days, and we'll see exactly how those go for her and whether she'll be able to compete. Her first competition, her first event, is scheduled for Sunday, and that will be a big deal. Everybody will be watching that.
Were you at her news conference yesterday, Christine?
I was not, although I watched some of it, as Ian said he did as well. And Lindsey Vonn is a terrific person. She is she's fun. She's from Midwestern Minnesota, girl, all grown up, the best U.S. skier, female skier probably ever. 5'10", 160 pounds. Like to see that her fully clothed on the cover of Sports Illustrated. That was a plus after what we normally see on SI, right, Matt, with women. So you know, this is a great athlete. She happens to have a terrific personality and be very attractive. She's got it all. And to see her looking so glum, and Ian, I know you felt the same way, and to see this dream potentially going away, this shin bruise that she can't even, as Matt said, can't even put on her boot, this is unbelievable timing. And for NBC, you know, for us, it's a news story, but for NBC, this is their games. This, you know, and to say the Michael Phelps thing, you know, the water doesn't change. So Michael kept going in the same water. The mountain is so different. There can be an ice chip. There can be a gust of wind. Whoa. And can all of a sudden first place in the downhill could be 7th in the downhill. So I think Lindsey's always been smart. I'd like to get one gold medal. But the thought of 3 or 5 and now the thought of maybe nothing, this is, as Matt said, a huge story.
As you know, Christine, that from Turin, this is somebody that can deal with a lot of pain, was airlifted to a hospital after a training crash 4 years ago and still competed. So she's certainly somebody that if she can go, she will.
But why would she make that announcement if, in fact, there was a good chance she could go?
I think because it was that severe, and I think it sounds like it's in the absolute worst spot for a skier, in a big swath of her shin where you have to lean forward when you're skiing. It's pretty elementary to the sport. And for her to say it's just painful to put the boot on is pretty revealing.
What was your reaction, Ian?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things about the Olympics is that it's not just one story and one perspective on the Olympics. It's multiplied by the number of countries that are involved. And so it's interesting for me to hear all of you talk about that story, because obviously it is the focus in the United States, both in terms of the aspirations and hopes of a country and the business plan for NBC. In Canada, it's not a big story, right? Our focus is very much, you know, 98% on the Canadian athletes. And and in Italy, they would have the same thing going on there with their athletes. So it certainly has not been the headline story here in Canada.
You know, these games have been pegged as the greenest games. Are they, Matt Ranning?
Well, they certainly are now because they don't have any snow.
but beyond that, what does it mean? That was a definite focus
for Vancouver in the money spent for these games and the development of the facilities around these games. And, you know, as everybody is becoming more conscientious of that when you're building a lot of facilities, it would appear, you know, that's an easy thing to say as we hear promoted all the time that this is the greenest effort. But I would think because of the focus that the environment has taken on now that there would be evidence that that was certainly more of a focus coming in than you've had going in any games before.
Christine, what kinds of efforts?
Well, even the IOC has demanded that when cities bid for the Olympics now, winter or summer, Diane, they have to have in place a green plan. And so the city of Chicago, which of course got drummed out of the voting in the first round in the 2016 summer games, we know from back in October. But all of that was about, Pat Ryan, the organizer there, was talking about, we've got this plan, the environmental thing, we've shown them this, we've given them, you know, our projects, our drafts of what the city of Chicago will do. This is now, and it makes perfect sense, because the International Olympic Committee has a lot of flaws, and there's a lot of greed, and there's a lot of old people who should no longer be running the thing, very Eurocentric old white men. Who I think their time has come, and I've written that over the years in USA Today. Having said that, they also, I think, have a sense, Diane, of their place in the world. And I would never compare them to the United Nations, but the sense that this is a global entity that has to begin to deal with one of the biggest issues in our world. And so, yes, Vancouver, but any city now will have to do this.
Christine Brennan, she's sports columnist for USA Today. She is blogging. She is on Twitter. All that can be found at ChristineBrennan.com. Olympics open tomorrow, the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. And joining us from that beautiful city, Ian Hanomansing. He's co-anchor of CBC News Vancouver. He's covered the past three Winter Olympics for CBC Television, as well as Christine Brennan. She's sports columnist for USA Today. This is the seventh consecutive Winter Olympic Games she's been covering. Here in the studio, Michael Rennie. He's sports editor for The Washington Post. Forgive me, Matthew Rennie. And we'll open the phones in just a moment. 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Ian, talk about what security is like there in Vancouver.
Well, there are a couple of issues about security. First of all, the cost of it. I guess this is true of every Olympic city, but we've found over the last 7 years or so since Vancouver was awarded the Games, all the costs seem to be escalating so much. And originally, the estimate for security was $100 million. The last estimate we saw was $900 million Canadian. That's a lot of money by Canadian standards, and that's created a bit of a stir here locally. Secondly, and we've all become familiar with this, I was at the Salt Lake Games, as Christine was as well, in the shadow of 9/11. We expected to get a lot of security there. There was. And what the officials, the police officials have said here, and I talked to the head of what they call the Integrated Security Unit just a few days ago, is while they have to be ready for everything, and that doesn't just include a security problem. We're in an earthquake zone. They have to be ready for that. They have to be ready for snow, although they're pretty sure they don't have to worry about that, but they have plows standing by. While they're ready, and they call their readiness level a medium presumptive threat, at the same time, their intelligence reports tell them that there is no threat against these games. They think everything will be fine. And for them, success will be having lots of police and armed forces people on standby, but not creating a sense of an armed camp. And Christine, my feeling is that so far they've managed that, right?
Oh, they absolutely have. It's a warm, friendly feeling, and I don't mean just the temperature. It's I will say this, though, Diane, an interesting little twist, the credentials that we get. We have, of course, it's a barcode picture. Ever since the Munich disaster, where 11 Israeli athletes and coaches were killed in 72, that, you know, the security has been very, very serious at the Olympic Games, as it should be. And what we have over the years, all my Olympics, I have smiling pictures. It's just a mugshot, your column picture, whatever it is. You know, Matt knows what that is. It's just, you know, just send in pictures. You can be turned sideways, whatever. This one, you had to look straight ahead, white background, no smile, and that's because they're doing the face recognition, the computer-generated face recognition, even for the media. So that's a first, and I think it shows the nature, especially on the border, with, you know, knowing what happened in, what was it, New Year's Eve of 2000, that this is no joke, absolutely.
But, you know, it's interesting. You've got 5,500 athletes. You've got about 1.6 million people expected to show up with tickets to watch the games. How do you keep security from not being in your face, Matt?
Well, I think it's part of what we deal with in this world now. And then I think, first of all, I think there's a little bit more, people are more acclimated to that. You know, we all wear around our ID badges everywhere around town just to go to work. So I think people, there's a certain level of expectance of security that, you know, I'm going to walk into a building, people are going to ask me to open my coat or open my handbag or whatever, that maybe didn't exist 20 years ago. So I think people are a little more tolerant in that regard and understanding of it. But yeah, I think that's a difficult balance to strike between being intrusive and keeping people safe.
Yeah,
and I should jump in.
Sure,
I
go
should
ahead,
jump in and say
Ian.
That, you know, keep in mind too that Vancouver's a lot different than Washington, D.C., or even sort of any major American city. You know, our culture here really is of not having a lot of security. There, for example, is not a school in anywhere in the Metro Vancouver area that has a metal detector, which I know for some Americans is a bit of a surprise. I remember being in the San Francisco area a couple of years ago, going to an amusement park, having to go through the airport-style security. We don't have that here, so I think that puts an additional pressure on police to... it's more difficult to strike the balance between making these secure games and at the same time fitting into the culture that we expect in a city like Vancouver.
But, Christine, don't you have massive security measures on the part of the U.S., for example, with the Coast Guard, the Navy, and the Canadian Navy?
Absolutely, Diane. You know, the U.S., we are that... You know, the big presence everywhere. You know, there's no doubt about it. It's the U.S. team tomorrow night in the opening ceremonies will receive the second biggest cheer, always. Of course, the Canadians, when they come in so proud and so, you know, thrilled, will, of course, as they should, get a huge warm welcome from their fans and family, the host nation. But U.S. is huge, and it's a presence everywhere and is asked to help. Greece, my goodness, you know, that was a home game for the terrorists, the Athens Games in 2004. We were right there, and that was the first summer games after September 11th. So the U.S. will always do that. I think the U.S. is known for doing a really good job on this, and working so closely with Canada, which again is a no-brainer, Diane. So, but yes, U.S. is on the border. U.S. is out in the ocean, keeping the perimeter.
And U.S. is in the air, Matt.
That's correct. Yeah, and that's anytime you're talking about these big events, that's a huge concern. People just keeping the air over the event safe, and that's a huge priority, I know, for the Americans.
So I gather all private aircraft are restricted. They have to be funneled through what, gateways?
Yeah, I'm not even sure of the specifics on how planes are coming in, but I'm sure that there's going to be tight restrictions on people coming in. And I don't know, you have people coming in from all over the world, and you have people coming in that are leaders from all these countries from all over the world. I know that plenty of people that Dmitry Medvedev is expected to be at the opening ceremonies, and so I know that you have the leaders from all over the world coming in.
All right, Christine, let's talk about the economy and how the bad economy has affected sponsorship of the games and the teams.
Right, Diane. Well, NBC is projected to lose $250 million, and I'll bet you it will be more. Mm-hmm. They are now paying billions of dollars for the rights for these games. Of course, paying pre-economic downturn and disaster, and now having to deal with the fallout afterwards. I think there's even an issue though that goes right to the heart of televising these games. Again, we're, of course, not rights holders. USA Today, I work for ABC News, so I am a competitor. I should say that, a competitor of NBC. I don't wish them ill, of course. I want them to succeed. I want everyone to care about these games. But I think, Diane, what's happened is because we have the Olympics now every 2 years, and really the turnaround from Beijing to Vancouver is only 18 months, and Beijing was such an incredible presence historically, culturally, worldwide, that I think a lot of people are saying, what? We got another Olympics already?
Yeah.
I think it's catching people, not in Canada. Ian, and in this country is
sure.
Primed, and they're thrilled, and I love it. It makes me smile because it's exactly what it should be. But in the U.S., I think with NASCAR, with the Super Bowl last week, Matt and what you guys have been doing at the Post, it's just like, oh, okay, now we got to deal with this. Get Amy Shipley up there,
yeah.
kind of thing. And I think that it comes almost too quickly, and there's a certain sameness when people go through the dial and they see hockey players playing for the for the Caps, and then they see, oh, now they're all dispersed playing for different. There's no specialness. There is specialness. I love the Olympics more than anything else. It's still the best thing going in sports. But there's a sameness and a lack of uniqueness, if that's the way to say it, that we would not have seen when we didn't have 300 or 400 cable channels, 20 years ago.
Matt.
Well, one thing that I think will be interesting in these games is that from an American perspective, a lot of the sports where America, Winter Olympic sports, where America are usually the premier events here, like women's figure skating, for example, the Americans don't have as high expectations as they have in past years. But on the other hand, in sports where Americans have not typically been competitive, sports like Nordic Combine, which combines cross-country skiing and ski jumping, or biathlon, which combines cross-country skiing and target shooting, we do have medal contenders that we've never had before. And it'll be interesting to see whether Americans love medals or whether Americans love figure skating, because it will be you will be competitive in events that Americans don't see except for every 4 years, if that.
But back to this question of sponsorship, how did Stephen Colbert get involved, Matt?
Well, Stephen Colbert took an interest in the American speed skating team, which, again, another sport where except for every 4 years, you don't see a lot of exposure for speed skaters. And the team was underfunded. And he took an interest in that and got involved in very actively through his program on Comedy Central, raising money for the team, and was very successful with it. To the point of wearing the speed skating uniform himself, which
all
is
right,
a sight.
Now, Ian, how have Canadians reacted to Colbert?
You know what? For me to be completely honest, we're just thrilled he noticed. You know, we have a complicated relationship here in Canada with the Olympics and without the Olympics when it comes to the United States. And to have a comedian like Stephen Colbert on his program even acknowledge where Canada is, much less pretend that he has a beef with us, we were thrilled. And I know our sports guy on our local news here couldn't put the clips on fast enough, you know, with his own mock outrage, but really secretly hoping that at some point someone on Colbert's staff would notice it and maybe put it on Colbert's program. So, you know, there were some predictable web comments, people unhappy with the fact that Canadians were being satirized. But for the most part, we were happy to be noticed.
And Christine, you talked about the amount of money NBC is likely to lose on these games. What about Vancouver? To what extent is there going to be a loss of money there? And how are Canadians reacting to that, Ian?
Well, you know, I mentioned on one of our local radio shows yesterday, and a lot of people came up after and said that was an interesting point of view, that we're kind of polarized in this city when it comes to the Olympics, and a lot of people are grumpy about the Olympics, the displacement in terms of security and but also the money that was spent. And I was saying to people that you can enjoy the Olympics and it doesn't have to be a political statement. So I think a lot of people are starting to do that. Having said that, we still haven't done the accounting here. And it is costing a lot, and it's costing a lot. This is a typical story at Olympics everywhere. It's costing us in ways that weren't fully disclosed before. We're promised that it will be at some point, but we worry that it will be 2 or 3 years from now when we've moved on to other stories. There are all kinds of, besides the obvious costs, all kinds of hidden subsidies. Our airport, for example, which is a public entity, is an official supplier to the Games. How much is it paying? And in other words, how much are we paying indirectly as a sponsor in that way? So the costs are probably staggering. I mentioned how security is at least 9 times what we originally were told it's going to be. We hear about the economic positive impact of the game. Certainly when you host an Olympics, it becomes a de facto stimulus package because so much money is spent. But the actual accounting, you know, what's the cost-benefit analysis? Maybe we'll have the answer to that after the Sochi Games.
All right, let's open the phones. 800-433-8850. I'll remind you, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. My big question is, I've heard that a lot of athletes are coming down to our mountains in Utah, where it actually happens to be snowing right now, to practice. And so I wanted to know, what does that mean in terms of the performance we're going to see at the Vancouver Games, since they're not able to practice as much in Vancouver? And I'll take my answer off.
All right. Thanks for calling, Christine.
Sam, it's a good question. And what, of course, it means, if in fact, as we know, the up at Whistler, there are some issues with fog. What it means, it's the great benefit and boost to the Canadians, because they are basically been living on that mountain. I heard one Canadian downhill skier say, you know, I can do this with my eyes closed. Hmm. And for those who haven't had as many runs on the mountain, which would be almost everybody else, it is a disadvantage. And of course, as anyone who's skied, whether you've skied a bunny hill or the Alps, you know that snow can be very different. And if you can imagine the most precise and technical and most athletic people doing that on Earth, that endeavor on Earth, these skiers, to think that you're in the Salt Lake snow, which is, you know, which is great and plentiful, obviously, and then you come up here, and if it's, I've skied at Whistler once, and I'm certainly, you know, not in this caliber, but as a blue run skier, when I skied at Whistler, it was slushy to me. Huh. And this was in March, and it was springtime in 01. It was not the same, but it's a different kind of snow. And so Sam's question is right on, because you could have a lot of people in the United States or other countries then coming up and finding very different conditions. Advantage Canada, which is, as it should be, they're the home team.
Matt.
I think you're right, Christine. And as you know, this course is not only the difference between mountain to mountain, but there's difference between day to day on the same mountain. So you could see, if you have variable weather conditions, that you could completely different course, and people have the most experience on that course are always going to be an advantage.
All right. To Charlottesville, Virginia. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I'm not a huge Colbert fan, but I would applaud him till next year for his contribution. The national parks were saved by men putting up their own money for things like this. Good for him. And number two, I love sports. I'm an amateur athlete. My children are athletes. But I've always dreaded the thought they might get into an Olympic sport, because I feel so bad for these kids who are not Michael Phelps and who are not this Lindsey Vonn, who I'd never heard of till this morning, and I made the mistake of turning on the Today Show. What a shameless exhibition of commercialism. Oh, my goodness. But all these poor kids who've been training, who don't make it on television, all we're going to see are these snowboarders. Sean Penn, or whatever his name is, why was he on 60 Minutes? I mean, there's too much emphasis on these few stars. One of your guests just said earlier how unfortunate it is that the success of the Olympics are based on this one girl, this one young woman. Mm. What a sad comment that is.
Mad.
Well, I think actually what you may end up seeing, especially if Lindsey Vonn can't participate in all the events that you scheduled to, like I said, you may end up seeing some sports that you've never seen before, not just since the last Olympics, but even in Olympics past. It's true that the NBC broadcast is very American-centric and focused on the American athletes, and I think there's an opportunity this year to maybe see some competitions that you haven't seen before.
But doesn't this happen every time you've got an Olympics, Christine, that you get some of these kids elevated to draw in the viewership?
Oh, absolutely. You know, NBC has paid so much money, as we said a few minutes ago, that they have to promote this and they have to pick people. And Tom's right, you know, that if you're Lindsey Vonn out, and of course the games haven't even begun, my goodness, one of the lines is it's Vancouver, right? So, but on the flip side, let's look at Lindsey Vonn. This is an athlete who's put it all out there for this moment. You know, 52 weeks from now, they play the Super Bowl again, and Peyton Manning can give it another go. Lindsey Vonn can't do that. So I think it's great for the athletes to get that opportunity and take it and have the guts to try these kinds of sports versus the ones who, you know, play every day.
Christine Brennan, sports columnist for USA Today. Short break. When we come back, more of your calls, comments. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. By the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. By Jeffrey Kenner, in appreciation of NPR's international coverage and its foreign correspondents. And by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of the surgeon who developed the hernia repair, the radical mastectomy, the use of sterile rubber gloves, and the medical residency system. But through experimenting with cocaine as an anesthetic, he became an addict. We'll talk with Gerald Imber about his new book, Genius on the Edge. Join us.
And we're back. Let's go right to the phones to Nick in Tilton, New Hampshire. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling to make a comment about the sustainability of the so-called green games. How can we sustain green Olympics if we're building new summer and winter venues every 2 years?
Ian Hanna-Mansing.
Well, interestingly, in Vancouver, one of the things that I think a lot of people here felt that they got right is that they didn't do a lot of building. The opening and closing ceremony will be held in an old football stadium, which will be spruced up inside. The two big skating rinks in town, one the home of the Vancouver Canucks, also are being repurposed for the Olympics. But, you know, the Olympics are inherently an ungreen activity. You have all these people flying in. You have all the consumption that's going on during the Olympics. So, and that's not going to change. There's no way you can have an athletic meet this big without using a lot of fuel. David Suzuki, an iconic environmentalist here in Canada, has a foundation, and they really hold institutions' feet to the fire on environmental issues. And last week, they gave the Vancouver Olympics a bronze medal for its environmental stewardship of these games. So, sort of the media savvy aside of having a bronze medal, I think that's pretty good endorsement, pretty fair endorsement of where Vancouver is in terms of its goals of having a truly sustainable or green games.
All right, let's go to Lydia, who's in Michigan. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show, and I'm so excited to have the chance to talk with you about the Olympics. I understand one of the previous caller's points about kind of a few superstars that seem to kind of overtake the media spotlight, but I just want to say I'm so excited. My sister-in-law, Natalie Nicholson, is a member of Team USA in the women's curling event this Olympics. And she's been training since she was a teenager. She's so excited to have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to compete at this level. And, you know, all of these athletes have worked so hard and, you know, have thankfully had the support of family, friends, and coaches, and patrons and sponsors to help them achieve this dream. And I just, you know, I think it's so great. Tomorrow's my birthday. The Olympics opening ceremony is on at 7:30. I'm going to be glued to the TV.
All right. Well, let me wish you in advance. Happy birthday, Lydia. Talk about curling, Matt.
Well, I can talk about curling a little bit because I've actually done it once before. So unlike a lot of Americans, I know that it's a huge deal in Canada and that there was a lot of pressure on the Canadian curling team against Great Britain. They're both expected to contend for the gold medal. Basically, what you're doing is you're on a sheet of ice and you're sliding these rocks down that are about 35 pounds and trying to get them to stop on a target at the other end of the ice. And what a lot of people will remember if they've ever seen it even for a few minutes is that you have other people on your team sweeping the ice and often or not sweeping depending on whether they want the stone to curl more, meaning turn more as it during its course down the ice. It's a little bit like bowling, maybe.
Yeah. You want to add to that, Christine?
Well, actually, I was curling last night.
Uh-huh.
And Diane, yeah, USA Today had a party at the Vancouver Curling Club. Ian, I was there. And
did you win?
And I don't even know what winning is. Guys. I'm confused. It is shuffleboard on ice with bowling mixed in. And it's being from the Midwest myself, from Toledo. It was I felt right at home. And but I you know, going back to the point that you were making, is that it's huge here. It's huge. And that's what's fun. I mean, we've talked about a little bit of sports, and you know, when you think of hockey, for example, pressure, and Ian, you know, knows this, hockey, Canada, men's and women's hockey. If there's not a gold medal for both, whoa.
Yeah.
Gretzky just got into town yesterday. I mean, this, you know, and same with curling. And these are things that U.S., I hate when we say America, U.S. Citizens go, oh,
what?
Okay. Well, whatever,
yeah.
Hockey, you
yeah.
know, curling. But it, but isn't that great? And that's what is fun about the Olympics. And I hope that some of those who are a little bit down on the games, you know, like say, well, okay, I'll watch luge for the first and only time in my life.
Yeah.
And also, a quick point, figure skating is going to take over. And if Lindsey Vonn is not on the mountain, figure skating, which, of course, is a sport I cover and know a little bit about, the sequins will be flying. There's already controversy galore in the men's event. And so that will always rescue the games with TV ratings for Canada and the U.S.
Isn't the controversy not about sequins but about fur?
Johnny Weir, you're talking about Diane.
Get
yeah, he got the little fur patch off of his long program outfit out of there when, obviously, animal rights groups complained. Johnny Weir is really the third U.S. male skater of Jeremy Abbott, Evan Lysacek are the other two. There's eight men who could win the Olympic gold medal in men's skating. I've never seen a competition this deep. It's going to be incredible. Johnny Weir, though, a fun little anecdote, Diane. Yeah, they room up, you know, the figure skaters all team up and share suites. And Johnny Weir's roommate is Tanith Belbin. Tanith, of course, is a woman ice dancer. And she said Johnny's already emailed about the hair products that he's sending and the and the art for the wall and the carpet that he's already shipped via FedEx to get to their room. So it's going to be an odd couple of a man and a woman, Johnny Weir and Tanith Belbin, rooming together in the Olympic Village. Watch out for that story.
All right, and let's go now to Homewood, Alabama. Lynn, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
To everyone, and kudos to also Steve Colbert for taking up like he did. And my question is, I've never really took interest or watched the Winter Olympics, and I've just heard you discussing some of the games that will, you know, take part in it. What can I look for, or what should I be looking for in the games as to how to watch and rate it and want to come back again and watch it, you know, the next Winter Olympic season?
Interesting question. Ian.
Boy, that's a challenge for a Canadian because we have such inherent interest in some of these sports that I've never really had to step back and think about that. But then I think back to Beijing, games that I covered 18 months ago, and my family went with me. And at one point, we had tickets to handball. I never even could describe what handball was 2 years ago. They went to it. And, you know, there's something transformative about watching virtually any sport at the Olympic level because you truly are watching the best in the world. And they are competing where the stakes are so high. So the competition itself, no matter the sport, almost without exception, is interesting. And one of the things I have to have my hat off to the United States media for is the ability to tell us stories about people. You know, in Sports Illustrated, on NBC, and USA Today, some great stories about the person behind the competition. So I would say that if you're not familiar with the sports, to read the coverage about the people, care about the people and understand the challenges that they're trying to overcome. And so I for me, that's what makes it interesting.
Matt?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think if you're getting a chance to see some of these winter sports for the first time, one thing a lot of them have in common is speed. And if you're interested in that, that is really something that's pretty compelling on television. You maybe don't get quite as good a sense of it on television as you would in person, but from the speed skaters, both long track and short track, to the downhill alpine skiers, to all the sledding sports, it's really something that's visually pretty stunning.
Here's an email from Carrie in Cincinnati, who says, I had the pleasure of watching the 1980 Winter Olympics from inside Canada. There I actually got to see what I describe as the smorgasbord of sports and competitors from many different countries, regardless of their chances to medal. How boring to watch Olympic competition, both summer and winter, from within the U.S. Since then, the navel-gazing of media concentration on U.S. competitors to the exclusion of the many great performances and stories of so many others. Can I stream CBC coverage via internet now, Ian?
Well, first of all, I have to sadly disclose that CBC did not win the rights to the Vancouver Games. So after covering so many games and being known by a lot of people in the United States as a network that covers athletes from around the world, one of our competitors will be doing that. So you can stream away, but you won't see really anything from the Olympics. But also, the Olympics have the strictest rules of any sports organization I know in terms of protecting coverage from broadcasters from outside the borders. So I don't think you'll be able to see anything else. Over the years, you know, we really have on Canadian television covered the world. We like to think it's because perhaps we have kind of this worldly perspective, but honestly, it's also because we don't have the Michael Phelps, for example. We don't have those superstar athletes often who are dominating in Olympics. There's some exceptions, but we have to tell the world stories because, you know, we don't have all the amazing stories that the United States has just within its own Olympic team.
And go ahead, Christine.
Well, and for Carrie, I certainly see the point, but I think, for example, I've been watching CTV, and I'm doing some work with CTV, which is sadly for Ian, the one that has the rights. And you know, they're also focusing on Canada a lot. I mean, as they should. It's, you know, this is for the hometown people and the people of Canada, and that you care about your own. I mean, you know, why do people in New York cheer for the New York Yankees? Come on. You know, it's just, it's what happens. So I think that sometimes we pile on NBC or others unfairly. But I would say this, that especially with figure skating, where I'll be a lot, Diane, you know, we're already looking at the Russians. I've got a column today about the Russians who are really working hard to get Evgeny Plushenko, the Olympic gold medal. Probably most of the people who would read USA Today in an airport today probably don't even know what I'm talking about. But it's a big controversy brewing within the sport about can the Russian Plushenko come back and win a second gold medal. And criticism of him in official skating videos was purged so that they can kind of grease the way for Plushenko. So there are stories, and I assure you, Carrie, I promise you, as a fellow Ohioan, that we will be covering those in USA Today. I know that that the Washington Post will. Matt will make sure of that. And we'll be doing USATOday.com website webcasting as well.
Excellent.
And I hope you give us a chance to show that there are more than just U.S. athletes here at the Games.
Matt.
Well, one thing that's pretty interesting here in Washington is that there's a lot of talk that there'll be hockey fans locally will be rooting for Russia in these Olympics because the best player in the world, hockey player in the world, plays for the Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin. He also happens to be Russian. And so there'll be three Russians actually play, three Washington Capitals playing on Team Russia in these Olympics. So it's sort of a new dynamic.
What about this whole question of the H1N1 virus and to what extent the athletes, the medics are prepared?
I think it's health concerns are always a big deal. Anytime you have any kind of viral situation like that, you would be concerned in the village. Everybody's in close quarters. So it would be a very easy situation for something to get out of control. But I'm sure every precaution is being taken, particularly with people whose bodies are so important to what they do.
Do you see evidence of those precautions, Ian?
No, you know, H1N1 seems so last year. You know, it's in the media cycle that's much more than 24 hours old. No, I don't think H1N1's been much of an issue, but illness always is a possibility. And in Nagano, for example, just the regular seasonal influenza decimated the athletic contingent, certainly the Canadian team. And, you know, we were talking about Lindsey Vonn earlier in the injury. Just imagine being an athlete who has one day to perform at his or her best, and they come down with the flu, not the cold, but the full-blown influenza a couple of days before. That's always a possibility.
Elvis Stoiko, actually, Canada's hope for in men's figure skating, who won the silver, but he did it in Nagano with a very, very bad case of the flu.
Now, you had the IOC president expressing concern about a number of doping cases among the Russian athletes. What about that, Christine?
That's always front and center, isn't it? The issue of cheating, performance-enhancing drug use. The Olympics really opened our eyes to that back in 1988 in Seoul when Ben Johnson from Canada won the men's 100 meters and then 3 days later was stripped of the gold medal when he was found to have tested positive for a steroid. And we were off and running on the story of our lives. That is, of course, not just the international sports world, the Olympic world, but, of course, baseball, football, you know, everywhere. It's everywhere.
Christine Brennan, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. There's been a fair amount of drama in the U.S. ski team. Matt, talk about Bodie Miller.
Well, Bodie Miller entered the Turin Games 4 years ago as the premier athlete that promoted going into the game, premier American athlete, I should say. and didn't live up to expectations. And then there was all sorts of reports about how he was spent more time in the Italian nightclubs during the event than he did getting preparing for his training. And then when he didn't perform, it became very adversarial between him and the media. And even recently, he's said things like that the media blew Turin completely out of proportion and that and sort of tarnished his reputation that way. But he's back, and he'll be skiing on Saturday. It'll be a big event for people to watch to see whether he can sort of redeem himself from the
Tour. Who else are you watching, Matt?
In downhill skiing or in any event?
Any of the events. Who should we be watching?
Well, I think it'll be really interesting. I'm fascinated by the hockey to see so much pressure on Team Canada, but also so much pressure on Team Russia, which is always an interesting dynamic inside that team, as sometimes they have internal strife. But I would love to see a Canada-Russia hockey gold medal game.
How about you, Ian?
Well, Christine nailed it when she said that for Canadians, it's all about the hockey. And with women's hockey, really, there are only two contenders for the gold medal each year, Canada and the United States. It's in men's hockey that really, keep this in mind, that since the NHL players have been allowed to compete in the Winter Olympics, there have been three gold medal games. Six countries have played in that game. That makes Canadians heartsick, the possibility that Canada not only wouldn't be in the gold medal final, but wouldn't win. But everything here is about that game.
And Christine, what are you going to be particularly watching?
I'll be watching the soap opera of the Olympics, and that, of course, is figure skating. It kicks off with the pairs, which probably will be the least interesting of the four disciplines. 8 years ago was the pairs figure skating judging scandal and the French judge. This time, I think it'll be pretty straightforward. Then, as we said, the men and Plushenko and being overmarked and all of those controversies. The U.S. has three men who are great. And then come the ice dancing. And we're a dancing nation now, Diane, with, you know, Dancing with the Stars.
I'll try to get out there.
Two U.S. Ice dance teams could win. It could be a North American sweep, I think will give the Russians a fit on that one. So we'll see. It should be fun.
Christine, thank you so much. Christine Brennan.
Thanks, Diane.
Sports columnist for USA Today. You can reach her at ChristineBrennan.com. Ian Hanomansing, co-anchor of CBC News Vancouver, and Matthew Rennie, sports editor at The Washington Post. Enjoy the games, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Diane.
Bye-bye. I'm Diane Rehm.